Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, it's bird news with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, or stories this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So, a flamingo on Cape Cod? It really was true.
Yes, and it wasn't plastic, and it wasn't on somebody's lawn.
And it wasn't a fake photo. It was a real photo.
It wasn't a fake photo. Yeah, so boy, it was a whole thing. And so the way it progressed was somebody who wasn't known as one of the local hardcore birders just posted to the Cape Cod Birders Facebook group without a lot of information, just a photo like, oh, my husband took this photo 45 minutes ago at Chapin Beach in Dennis, and it's a flamingo standing out on the flats. And then she posted, a couple people are like, do you have any more information? You know, and she posted a couple more. And so I guess he was fishing out there. She didn't say that, and we didn't know that at the time. The perspective was a little weird. Like, he was looking back at land, and the flamingo is standing in the water, and there were some waves breaking. It all looked very strange, and it was sort of pixelated. And so some people were like, oh, that's fake. Like, I went looking for it the next morning, and there was one birder there, some British guy, and he's like, oh, it's a hoax. But birders knew that it most likely was real because they follow larger regional rare bird alerts, and there had been an American flamingo on Long Island for the 2 days before that, and it disappeared. So that Sunday, it had disappeared from East Hampton, in Long Island, and then that afternoon, you see this report on Cape Cod birders, and so it's very plausible. And I look, it's only 114 miles from where it was on Long Island to Chapin Beach, and that's not far. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to drive there, it would take you forever. But as the flamingo flies, it was not that far, and it's not very far north. If you look at a map, it's mostly west of here. Anyway, birders are out taking this very seriously, and they're out scouring, you know, everywhere, every possible part of the flats on the bay side of the Cape. No luck, nothing that evening. And so it basically was gone by the, you know, it was just gone. And then 2 days later, I spoke to somebody who had called Wellfleet Bay, who was able to corroborate that this was a real flamingo. Someone named Sam Roth, this young woman, had photos and video from that day. Because for 2 days, I'm like, it was beautiful Sunday at Chapin mm-hmm. Beach. Somebody else saw this flamingo. I need somebody else to give me photos of this thing, because people are calling this a Photoshop fake. And it most likely was not. But it was not. And so Sam has a video of it kind of walking and feeding, actually, in one of the tide pools on the dead low tide there.
That's what I was going to ask you. What does it eat? I mean, was the food it normally eats here?
Well, they eat a variety of things. Anything they can strain out of the water. Mm-hmm. So they have that really specialized bill. They're filter feeders, and they feed with their head upside down. You've seen it at a zoo or on TV. And they just strain water through their bill. And any zooplankton, any little shrimp, being whatever grass shrimp are in the water, algae, you know, anything that gets filtered out of the water, they can eat. And so, you know, I don't know that it was really excited about the food options up here compared to what it's used to in the Caribbean.
That's why it left. But, yeah.
Well, I don't know what this bird is doing, but it ended up back in Long Island. And I think it's still there. It's now bouncing back and forth between two sites about 60 miles apart on Long Island. As recently, I think, as this morning, though it disappeared again for a little while. So it can't hide for long because it's a 5-foot-tall pink bird that just stands out in the open on tidal flats. So this was remarkable. And it's likely to be the first record of a wild flamingo for Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. There are a few in the distant past, 1964, 1985. There were some like zoo flamingos or private captive flamingos that escaped and ended up in places. And they were determined to be escaped birds. Mm-hmm. But this is almost certainly a legitimate wild bird because of this hurricane that we know last August, early September, the very end of August, Hurricane Idalia. It had this interesting track where it went up through the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. It sort of did a loop-de-loop at the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, where there's a colony of like 40,000 American flamingos nest there, not far from Cancun, oddly enough. And so they move around the Caribbean a little bit after the breeding season. And so some of them probably got caught up in the eye of this hurricane. And we know they did. And they got deposited mostly in Florida, but up as far as Wisconsin last September.
I mean, we talked about this. I remember that.
I mentioned it in a bird report some last late summer, early fall. And those flamingos, when that happens, they tend to, they're like, whoops, got to go back to the Caribbean. They're just sort of like, they don't know where they are. They're like refugees. And sometimes they're permanent refugees. They never make it back to the Caribbean. And so they just sort of do the best they can where they are. They wander around sometimes for years. And a number of states, even Georgia, Georgia's right next to Florida, but Georgia now has a little flock. Those will be Georgia's first ever wild flamingos.
Wow.
That's how, I mean, this is really, they were extirpated from Florida. You know, back in the 1800s, apparently you could see 1,000 American flamingos. They might have been breeding there. Now you're seeing an American flamingo in Florida. It works for the Disney Corporation. You know, it's a captive. It's in a zoo or it's a captive mm-hmm. bird. They're a Caribbean bird. So the Yucatan, Cuba, the Bahamas a little bit, and then down to Venezuela. So strictly the Caribbean. And even in Florida, it's a rare bird. Like, go see the flamingo. And so the fact that there was one on the Cape, Long Island, there was one in Pennsylvania last fall, a couple in Farm Pond in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. This was a remarkable event, this hurricane, just peppering eastern North America as far as Wisconsin with flamingos. And so we think that this is certainly one of those wild birds that's still kind of wandering around, maybe looking for other flamingos because they are a bird that likes to be in gigantic flocks. Yeah. I mean, huge breeding colonies, really.
And so this big news, you even got to be on the Weather Channel with this.
Yes. And so I ended up with this as this bird's sort of press secretary for multiple days. And at first locally, you know, I was on like the Channel 7 evening news. I just got a weird amount of screen time on that and all the papers, the Herald, the Boston Herald. My dad's rolling over in his grave, I'm sure, that I was quoted in the Herald. ABC, USA Today.
Yeah, People, is that big news?
People Magazine.
Yeah.
Friend Googled it. And they, People Magazine picked it up, and for, you know, everybody wants online content. Everybody's hungry for digital content, and they just poached it from one of the. They didn't do any original reporting. They just poached it from one of the Boston news stations. But I've appeared in People Magazine.
Woohoo! You made it.
Media, the zenith of my media career. But then the live interview on the Weather Channel yesterday was just bizarre. But that was pretty cool.
And it's interesting that when we see the flamingo, wasn't that the same day that the orca whale was also spotted? It was like people were going, "What's going on?" Right?
So those became like the paired wildlife events where people were like, "Geez, orcas and flamingos on Cape Cod. I've got to move there." Old Tom, the orca that surfaces every now and again, usually somebody fishing east of Chatham sees Old Tom somewhere. That's Old Tom. I would love to see an orca, and so would my son.
Yeah.
Like his
Wouldn't
favorite,
we all?
Favorite marine creature.
Ooh. All right. So back to what we usually see here. Tell us what's going on with the nesting birds. I will say almost every year I have something nesting in my yard, sometimes multiple nests. I have not found a single nest this year, which is very distressing. And I think it's because the dog last summer chased them all away. Maybe they remember. They go, "Oh, remember that yard? The dog? Let's not go there."
Mm. Damn dog. Yeah. I mean, nesting birds have a lot to contend with in the suburbs. And, you know, mostly it's the predators that do so well in the suburbs. Raccoons do very well in the suburbs. Skunks. Just quick sidebar. Skunks are still not doing well on the Cape. This distemper is keeping their populations way down. But I was doing a horseshoe crab survey at like 2 in the morning in Barnstable. And I hear this little, it's sort of like animal being killed or just whatever, little animal in distress. And it was baby skunks. This mother skunk was transporting her babies from one den site to another across a parking lot
Oh my
at
goodness.
2 in the morning. And she's like carrying their tiny, she's carrying them by the scruff of the neck and they're making a little meh. It was pretty adorable. It was actually nice to see a skunk. I haven't seen one in a long time. You know, but they're one of those predators that, particularly of ground nesting birds, that does so well in the suburbs. And so I've been following some nesting birds in my yard, and I just think it's raccoons. I think they get into the nesting boxes. I have to try to do a better job with, you know, some sort of baffles. It's hard because I have the boxes on trees, but they get in there, they reach in, and they just rip the nest contents out with their little hands. And so that happened to a titmouse nest. They used to do better, but now it seems like the predators are onto them. But high hopes for some great crested flycatchers that are using one of the boxes that the titmice usually use. But yeah, it's tough. We were following a cardinal nest, and then that got eaten in the pretty late chick stage. It's always a bummer when they get, the nest gets that far along and the chicks are getting bigger. Like, oh, yeah. And then then it's gone. It's like,
you know, it's
soon for them to have fled.
It's interesting. Jackson brought home a book. You know, the libraries at the schools sometimes let you take home the books they don't need anymore. And it was called Firebirds. And he said it sounded interesting. And it was a book about the natural forest fires that we see out west and how that habitat is very important, especially for birds. And it had the different birds that are found in that habitat. And mostly because the ground animals, there's no predators, there's no squirrels, all that stuff is gone. But robins were huge, and black-backed woodpeckers, they say. That's
absolutely,
like, that is their habitat. I had no idea, but they were talking about how we talk about these devastating forest fires, like there's nothing there anymore. But they're talking about how important in the wild areas where they're not threatening people, how they're really important, especially for bird habitat. And I thought that was really interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Fires are hugely important for so many species to kind of reset the successional clock. And, you know, when they're on a reasonable scale and a natural system, the problem is when you suppress fire for so long and then you get gigantic catastrophic fires.
Right.
But normal fires that are on a normal return interval, especially out west, are hugely important. And yes, olive-sided flycatchers, black-backed woodpeckers, lazuli bunting, a lot of birds, they really like recently burned areas, and some to a really specialized degree, like black-backed woodpeckers. They'll, you know, colonize them from miles and miles away. They become aware of them, and they're a beetle. And the reason is they're insects that do the same thing. They sense that there's been a fire, and these certain beetles then come in and then lay their eggs in the fire damaged and killed trees. And then the birds follow to eat the beetles. But yeah, when we do prescribed burns in the Champlain grasslands around here, I mean, very quickly, you wouldn't even know there was a fire. Like within a month, you wouldn't even know. Like it greens right up. It's a part of drier systems like we have here on the Cape. Fire's really important. And they do a really good job of it on Camp Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
They do an exemplary job maintaining habitat there to keep all of these species around that used to depend on those fires, grasshoppers, sparrows, and upland sandpipers, and things like that.
They do it at Crane Wildlife, too, over at Crane.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are talking about birds this morning, and we'd love to know, what's nesting in your backyard? What are you seeing? What kind of activity? 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It is Bird News this morning with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from Al in South Yarmouth. He says, I'm relatively new to the Cape. I took this picture in my backyard last weekend. If you look at the pictures carefully, you will see a few baby turkeys around their mother. Is there anything we should help them do to help them grow and thrive, or should we just let Mother Nature handle things?
Yeah, they take care of that.
Don't have to do anything, right?
No. They're always on the move. It seems like, and they're at this point in their life, they're really focused on insects, and so you don't really want to be throwing seed at baby turkeys because they need insects. And as turkeys get older, they eat a lot of things like acorns in the winter. You know, they do eat a lot of seeds, but the growing chicks need insects. They need, grassy areas to be picking grasshoppers and things off. And so they're moving around looking for bugs. And so, yeah, just provide, this is a good time to plug adding some natural habitat in your yard. If you have a big expanse of lawn, you can replace some of it with some, taller native bunch grasses, some, native perennials mixed in. There are mixes you can do. And that's the kind of thing they need. But yeah, just native plants with insects on them is what they need right now.
All right. Heather's giving us a call from Harwichport. Hi, Heather. Heather, are you there? All right, we'll try to get Heather back. So are most of the songbirds now done with the nest? Are they done breeding, or will we still see some activity there?
No, it keeps going, and if they can, they'll have second broods. Seems like robins are done with their first brood. I've seen, some just baby robins with the spotty breast here and there. It seems like most other things in my neighborhood are feeding baby cowbirds right now. And again this morning, and so I've been watching the local phoebe pair that always nests on my neighbor's shed two houses down. The cowbirds are onto them, and it. Almost every year, or at least every other year, the cowbirds get them. And for some reason, they move to my yard, and the cowbird chick just sits in my trees, and I watch them feed it. And so they didn't fledge any actual phoebes. And just this morning, I was walking around, and a couple of song sparrows were feeding a baby cowbird. And so, as we know, cowbirds are brood parasites. They lay their eggs in other birds' nests. They obligate, they can't make their own nest. And these There are certain species that they really hammer, yellow warblers, song sparrows in particular, and it doesn't seem to impact their populations. I feel like I see song sparrows feeding cowbird chicks more than I see them feeding their own, but song sparrows are incredibly, incredibly common and successful. And so they seem to be able to absorb that. Whereas other species around the country have become endangered to the point of near extinction because of cowbird parasitism, like Kirtland's warbler in the Midwest. But around here, and then yellow warblers are incredibly common too, despite heavy cowbird parasitism. But yeah, things will keep going. And then the last of our local songbirds to nest will be, do you remember?
No.
I know. You just tuned me out. I know how it is.
No, I don't remember. They are
Another bird show.
What
Right?
is it? What is it? What's the answer?
I'm just giving you a hard time. American goldfish. They're the
Oh,
last.
they are?
They're,
See, I didn't know
yes,
that.
they're weird.
Because they're here in the spring. You would think they would start earlier.
That's
Weird.
exactly why it's so strange, because they're here in the winter. They're singing by like February. They're
Yeah.
singing, singing, singing. And I'm listening to them singing in February, going, "You're not nesting until like July and August. Why are you
What are you
singing now?"
doing? Right.
Yeah,
Yes.
like what do you? You're not establishing a territory. I don't even. Those probably aren't even local ones. They're just
No.
kind of. I don't know. They just need a long ramping up
They're
of their
waiting for the
hormones,
warm
and
weather. They're like, it's not warm
yeah,
enough yet. We're going to wait.
and the. And the reason is they don't eat insects. They're one of the very, very few birds that really just eats seeds. They're like
Oh, interesting.
granivorous, and finches in general tend to be, fewer insects, and in some cases almost entirely seeds. And so, and including they feed their young seeds. It's very unusual in especially a songbird. So they wait for some of the flowers to have gone past, and so they have, seeds
Yeah,
to
they're
feed the babies. That's why they wait.
waiting for the food. Okay. Heather is calling from Harwichport. Hi, Heather. Heather, are you there?
Heather, are you there?
Ah, there. Are you there?
Uh-oh.
Hi.
The echo.
Hi. You know, can you turn your radio
Can you
down,
turn the
Heather?
radio? Yeah, I did.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm off that.
Yeah,
Can
go
you
ahead.
hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Go ahead.
I don't know what's going on. There seems to be some kind of interference.
What's your
Oh,
story, your
dear.
question? Go ahead, Heather. Oh, I think Heather hung up. Okay, well, we'll move on. All right, so Joe in West Harwich sent this. He goes, I went out to Chapin Beach to look for the flamingo as soon as I heard. I bumped into a reporter from one of the Boston TV stations. Says the next day, I found this in my yard when I got home from work. And he sends a picture of a plastic flamingo. I give one TV interview and just like that, everyone's a comedian.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. All right. Barbara's giving us a call from Brewster. Hi, Barbara. What is going on with the phones this morning? Okay.
Yeah, tough morning.
See if we, not as tough as yesterday. We had more technical. We're working on the technical problems. If anybody's wondering about that, it's lots of little gremlins. I don't know what's going on. All right, swallow-tailed kites. We talked about this before. Maybe resident in the area of the Upper Cape. What's going on?
Yeah, and this has gone on for a few years now. And so there are two species of kites that turn up here and neither belong here. It's always exciting. If you see any kind of kite, anything with kite in the name, you should be excited here on the Cape. But it is an annual thing where they blow up here as early as March in the case of swallow-tailed kites if you get a strong southerly wind. But the swallow-tailed kite is basically a tropical bird. Most of its distribution is in South America, but it nests as far north as Florida. But even there, they migrate. They leave Florida for the winter, and they migrate very early. Like in August, they're already leaving Florida to go south to South America. So given that life history, it's pretty improbable bird to be expecting here at any time, really. But for the last few years, kites that have gotten blown north by some southerly winds in the spring seem to stay and act very suspicious, like being seen in the same general area over and over again. So kind of like Forestdale, Marston's Mills, South Sandwich, there's an area there where people are continually seeing swallowtail kites. And a few years ago, you might remember, there was this weird thing where somebody did have two in their yard, got a picture of them mating, swallowtail kites in their yard. But it was like the end of summer. It was like way, way months too late for swallowtail kites to really be nesting. So it was just sort of recreational mating, let's say, of some young birds who are kind of practicing for next year. And so it was suggestive and super interesting, but not like actual nesting. And so we've kind of been on the lookout, but it's this consistent area. And I was just looking on the map in eBird the other day, all of the sightings keep popping up in this small area. So like south of kind of Marston's Mills Airport, and then like west into South Sandwich, and then down to like Osterville and Katuit sometimes. That kind of general area, I guess, like east of Mashpee Wakeby Pond. It's like the Bermuda, it's like this triangle of swallowtail kites. And so people in that area really need to be on the lookout. If you see one carrying a stick or, you know, carrying food off into the woods somewhere, these are indications that there really could be a nest, and it would be so strange. The other kite, Mississippi kites, are more northerly in their distribution, but still they only nest in the southern tier of states, except several years ago, more than 10 years ago, out of nowhere, they just started nesting in. They was floored, like, what? Like, what is this bird that they nest in Oklahoma, Market, New Hampshire, and then also Connecticut. So they sort of bookended us. And Mississippi kites, if you'd asked us 10, 15 years ago, like, oh, Massachusetts is due for Mississippi kites to be nesting here. But instead, it seems like swallowtail kites, even much less likely, are acting like they want to fear that area.
Now, Mark, I think we're having a little technical problem with your connection. I think we're going to maybe have Dan get you on the phone, right, Dan? And that way we can hear everything you're saying, dropping out a little bit. And we also seem to be having a little trouble with our phone lines. So hopefully this is going to work. But if you have an email seems to be working just great this morning. So you can shoot us an email with your bird comments, questions, or stories, or photos. We're happy to take a look at that at thepoint@capeandislands.org. And if you happen to be one of those folks who's seen those swallow-tailed kites, you know, flying around in that area Mark's talking about, we'd love to hear from you. And again, You can try the phone, 866-999-4626, or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So do we have Mark back again? You're still here. Okay,
I moved where I am. I'm not sure what the issue is, but it should be okay now.
Okay, yeah, you were cutting in and out. We were only hearing bits and pieces. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I moved inside.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
But pretty close to the Wi-Fi. I don't know why it would have been cutting in and out. But anyway.
It's those gremlins.
It's the gremlins. Yeah, both ends. We're getting technical difficulties here today.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just carrying on and on about swallowtail kites. Keep an eye. They could be nesting. I mean, they're just like the last couple of few Junes, month of June, which is even that's kind of late. Like they start nesting pretty early down in Florida because they migrate back to South America so early. I mean, really, by August, they're just massing. You can see bunches of swallowtail kites and trees getting ready to head back to South America down in, like, the Everglades. But it's just something to keep an eye out.
Yeah. You cut out there a little bit. I thought you were done. Right, Barbara from Brewster wonders, Mark, if you can ID a bird near her. She says it goes chee, 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 chee 4 times and then 5 times, 6 and then 7. Of course, I'm not the best bird, like, you know, in mimic bird or whatever, bird imitator. Yeah, but chee, chee, chee.
You're not going to enter one of those bird call contests?
No, I would not be the winner. Yeah.
Yeah, typically when people, it's often a titmouse. It's often a tufted titmouse. They make so many different sounds. There are two species. When people are like, what is this bird? I'd say a tufted titmouse or a Carolina wren. Mm-hmm. That sounds, you know, there are a few things that could be.
Yeah.
But. I'm going to, you know, tufted titmouse is always a good guess for a mystery call from somebody's backyard. And they're so common, and they really are like jazz musicians. They have all these different sounds. And I've been listening to them since I was a kid, and I feel like I hear new things that they do all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing one right now.
Ah, see? Have you heard about this bird that escaped from, I don't know, some zoo in Rhode Island, the Providence area? A blue-throated piping, is it guan? Do you know about this?
No, I know what piping guans are, but yeah. I did not hear about that.
No, evidently there were two of them that somehow escaped from the zoo, and they've been looking for them. I don't know if I guess they've been seen in different spots around Providence, but they've been asking for people's help in trying to capture these birds and bring them back to the zoo.
Oh yeah, Roger Williams. We were just we were not far. We just went to the Buttonwood Park in New Bedford with the kids the other day. But we're due to go to Roger Williams. The blue-throated piping guan duo snuck out of the exhibit.
Somehow.
I just Googled it up.
Yeah.
Boy, that's not a bird that's
it's a pretty big bird, right?
It's probably a mountain. It's a South American or Central American bird. I'm trying to remember where exactly that particular guan, but guans are big game birds that are from, say, Mexico down through South America, the big forest game birds that are hunted pretty heavily in their native range down there, because they're big, you know, they're like all kind of turkey sized. And so if you're someone living in the forest, that's a good meal, but that's not one I've seen other guans. Yeah, boy, that would be a cool thing to see.
Sitting walking in your backyard, around your neighborhood. Right? Yeah. All right, we have an email that says about goldfinches. We find that the goldfinch love to nibble our beet leaves and our brassicas, but we are letting go to seed. So there you go. That proves your point. They like the seeds. Cynthia says, this year we've had song sparrows fledge. Three broods of chickadees are nearly ready. Tree swallows have a nest in a box they've used before in our back meadow and are feeding young now. The great crested flycatchers are back in our front yard this year using the screech owl box, which we keep hoping some year we'll have screech owls using it. We're seeing hummingbird activity at the nectar feeders again, which makes us wonder if they are no longer on nest. Wow, Cynthia's got a lot going on in her yard.
Holy cow. Holy bird.
Holy bird, right. Wow, I'm jealous.
Yeah, me too. All right, but so kind of the bare minimum going on here.
Yeah, I know. Like I told you, nothing in my birds, but no nests. This is, as you have mentioned, the low point in the annual migration calendar, right? Songbird migration pretty much over, but shorebirds are going to start moving again in less than a month already.
Yeah, we'll be back. It's southbound migration and kind of post-breeding dispersal is really about a month away. I mean, even things like yellow warblers in about a month, you'll start to hear them making their little pre-migratory calls and thinking about heading back south again. And shorebirds will be coming south by the beginning of July. They have a very short breeding season in the Arctic. So right now they're very busy in the Arctic. All the shorebirds, most of them nest up there in Arctic tundra, and they have this short window to get that done, to get their one brood of chicks off. And then the adults head back south before the chicks are even fully fledged, really.
It's like, okay,
excuse me,
you're good. You're on your own.
Yes. They sort of abandon them, but it's, you know, there's always something moving in some direction. Like I said, yeah, this really is one of the low points, June, like mid-June. It's just breeding birds. You get some wandering things like, you know, yesterday morning I had a scarlet tanager singing in my yard, and they don't breed in my yard. They don't breed in my neighborhood. This was just a male without a mate kind of wandering around and moving through. So it's not to say there aren't surprises. Yesterday I had an indigo bunting singing in a local Harwich Conservation Trust property. I haven't hiked in a while. Probably doesn't normally breed there, but you can still get interesting birds that are moving around locally, you know, in places where you wouldn't normally expect them. But really the larger migration of songbirds is over. But seabirds. So the seabirds that you would see, like the shearwaters in particular, that you would see on a whale watch, they come from several different directions, and they're all, particularly the southern hemisphere ones, are moving north right now. First, the sooty shearwaters came in, and they're coming from the southern hemisphere, and then the great shearwaters, Wilson storm petrels, those three species are coming up from the southern hemisphere to occupy Stellwagen Bank and other kind of near shore waters up here for the summer. And so, like I said, there's always something moving, and that will that'll continue into July, and then the shorebirds will start moving south again. So, you know, it's never over completely, migration.
And yeah. So whale watch, not only can you look at the whales, you can look at some of the seabirds, right?
Yeah, please do. And yeah, let the naturalists know that you're interested in the birds. Often they are too, and they're excited. You know, if they know there are bird watchers on the boat, they'll talk more about the birds. And it's good. It's good for the captains and the companies to know that people are interested in the birds as well. It's still going to be, you know, they're still going to be chasing the whales, and not for obvious reasons, and not the birds, but you know, you get the birds as kind of a bonus, and let them know you want to see them.
All right. It is Bird News this morning with Mark Faraday. Our email seems to be the best this morning, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News this morning with Mark Faraday. Our email seems to be working best this morning. I have a little trouble with the phone. So our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Heather wants to know, Mark, if you think bird siblings mate with each other. She suspects that's happening with some flycatchers.
I can't think of how you would know that. there's no way at all you could know that, because there are no flycatchers that have multiple broods. So you're starting fresh every spring with birds that, you know, wintered as far away as Bolivia, and then, you know, they come back and you don't know who's who.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, in nature, animals do what they have to do. And in very small populations, you get inbreeding. It's very much a thing in nature. But I think they don't want to do it either. It's not great genetically to be, you know, inbreeding is not good. And animals seem to be aware of that. But if that's what they have to do, you know, they're having difficulty finding mates in small populations, that happens.
That's what they'll do. Okay.
Happened throughout the world of conservation biology, but I don't know how you would know that with flycatchers. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, now Helen says the squirrels are drinking the hummingbird nectar, and she wonders what she can do. That's on you. God, we had a lot of rain. You would think there'd be enough water around for them. I don't know.
Yeah, but the water, the rainwater doesn't have sugar in it.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't. You can just try hanging at different places.
They're hard to art smart. Those squirrels are smart, man. They know how to get into
Right. If you can hang it from a long string somewhere away from where they can jump, and it's just the usual, just like it's a tough battle with squirrels.
But, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they usually win.
All right. Matt in Chilmark writes, this year we have only one hummingbird regularly visiting our feeder, a female ruby throat, and she looks, how can I put this, fat. Are we using too much sugar? These are good questions this morning. I'm liking this.
They are interesting questions. No, there's no such thing as a fat hummingbird. They deal with carbs differently than we do. And they're, you know, their metabolism is just like a high performance engine going at full throttle all the time. Like they're not they're not getting fat. But what appears to be fat on birds is just how they hold their feathers. Typically, some birds do get fat. There are certain birds like warblers and southbound migration, black pole warblers in particular, can just pour on fat, but they have this hollow place birds for storing fat in the, you know, the wishbone is sort of on the breast, and there's like a triangular hollow in the wishbone. And in that they store adipose tissue. We sound scientific, fat that fuels them in their migration. Not, you know, they don't get like pot belly like people do. They have like logical places where they store their fat, and it's mostly around the breast. Like there's no that wouldn't be happening during breeding season, and it's probably just feathers.
Just feathers. Weird. Keep those questions coming, by the way. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so
she's just big boned.
She's big boned.
Be careful what you say
to
the hummingbirds.
Kate in Yarmouthport wonders if it's okay to keep feeding the orioles grape jelly as they raise their young. Also, squirrels are getting into the jelly. What do I do?
Jeez, I don't know.
Squirrels, they're eating and drinking everything.
I wonder if they're all getting fat, too. I wonder if that caller would, that emailer would consider them fat, too. you know, the grape jelly thing is, it can be controversial. If you took a poll of the orioles, they would all vote for yes, keep feeding the grape jelly because they love it. You know, it that's not helping. It's not like they depend on it. You know, it's grape jelly. It's not a natural thing. It's, you know, they should really be focused, and they are. If you watch orioles, and I don't even bother with the jelly feeder. I've tried it on and off. And it is nice when they come in. But I see orioles in my yard eating caterpillars, which is what they're supposed to be doing. You know, I know what they sound like. I know, you know, I can find them. And they're often in the oaks right outside in my yard, just hammering caterpillars like every other bird is doing right now. Because it's all about insects, and particularly little green caterpillars right now. If you are getting
everywhere.
Up the energy to breed, feeding young, and it seems to be I'm getting a little bit of defoliation in some of my oaks, but not really bad. So there's certainly plenty of caterpillars. They rain down on my deck. My kids find them. We love them. They poop all over the deck. We don't care. But that's bird food. Like that's if you're spraying your trees, you're killing all of that, and then the birds have to work a little harder to find the food. But you know. Yeah. If you really want to see orioles every day up close, then put out a jelly feeder. We do it at Wellfleet Bay Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. You know, the visitors love it. They're out in the kind of pollinator garden there. And visitors love to see. We get both orioles there. We get orchard orioles and Baltimore orioles.
Nice.
That doesn't I don't think it hurts them. Mm-hmm. It's
why not
see
right?
them basically. Yeah.
Hannah in Mashpee says, I've got a pair of Baltimore Orioles feeding nestlings in my yard in Mashpee across the street from Santuit Pond, and there's a female sitting on a nest not far from my yard, also near the pond. I also have blue jays feeding three fledglings. The robins fledged already. Male mourning doves are back to calling and courting. I've had at least one song sparrow and a catbird nest this spring, but I didn't see the young. Oh, and I heard a yellow-billed cuckoo in the neighborhood up to last week, so maybe they're nesting too?
Oh, man.
Wow.
I haven't had a cuckoo at all this entire spring. You know, Birdathon was a little too early. They're a late migrant. You know, they're coming from northern South America and Panama, places like that, and they come back kind of late. And they focus on caterpillars, hairy caterpillars in particular. The cuckoos can eat. They're some of my favorite birds, and I'm really jealous. I never get them in my neighborhood. They often like wetlands, but forested kind of wetland areas.
Well, but sounds boy, like she's close to the pond, so that's probably
And boy, that was a lot of fledgling action.
Her
mention of blue jay fledglings reminded me of a story. Last week, I was driving at Crosby Beach in Brewster. I was just like checking on the plovers and lease terns there, and I'm driving down the road by the Crosby Mansion, and blue jays just start like fledging into the street.
Oh, no.
Just like dropping these little stubby, just out of the nest blue jays. One's in the road, another one dropped into the road while I was helping the other one, and a truck kind of drove over it, straddling it.
Oh my.
And just scared it. And so I'm like picking up these poor little blue jay fledglings.
Get out of the road. Like,
saving them. And ironically, you know, they were probably fed on other birds' fledglings, because blue jays are notorious nest robbers. And I'm like, save the baby blue jays that are eating other nestlings. But anyway, they were adorable. I took this little video of one. That stage of just out of the nest songbird, where the tail feathers and wing feathers aren't really grown in fully. They're stubby. And they're just sort of stubby and helpless and hopping around. So I got to help a couple of blue jay fledglings out of the road. And I never see blue jay fledglings, as common as they are.
Me either. All right. Lee in Eastham says, common sense says there's no more suet feeding till fall. But when I've put it out, squirrels come and eat very messily. So many birds eat what has fallen onto the ground. So they benefit from it. Still, is it better not to put the suet out till fall?
You know what they say about common sense? It's not so common. I sometimes do suet all summer, and the catbirds love it. They keep hammering it. I feel, you know, they like that as much as the jelly. I think catbirds are the number two thing that eats the jelly after the orioles, or usually the number one because they're much more common. But I mean, I see birds on the suet all summer long. If it's the kind that's not all melty, then no real reason not to.
Right. Peter in Yarmouth says, my daughter claims she spotted a golden eagle just 2 days ago in the Salton Pond area just west of Barnstable Harbor. She cited the beak color as her means of identification. Are golden eagles ever sighted on Cape Cod? What other bird might it be?
It was not a golden eagle. That's a common misidentification. For some reason, people really want them to be golden eagles, and it's usually everything from red-tailed hawks to turkey vultures to typically young bald eagles, which are all brown. No beak color. I don't know if there's ever been a spring record. It would typically be winter, and we go 10, 15, 20 years between golden eagle sightings here on Cape Cod. It's that level of rarity, especially with someone who's not a regular birder is reporting it. It's never a golden eagle,
Could it have been a young bald eagle? Because we do have the bald eagles around, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so bald eagles have been skyrocketing. They're nesting in multiple places on the Cape, and in both cases, for multiple years. So there's this population of young bald eagles is going up, and they're mostly brown for the first 4 years. They don't have the white head definitely for the first three, and then it starts coming in the fourth year, and so they go through this progression where they're mostly just a big brown bird with some kind of white modeling on the breast. But the golden eagle's not a thing so much.
All right. George writes, evidently he listened to one of our sonics, those little vignettes that we play, and heard a recording of a woman who he says is now deceased that lived on the Cape. She told a wonderful story about taking care of a seagull with a broken leg and then a crow with a broken leg. And he wondered about that. We probably don't want to do that ourselves anymore, right? We have wildlife rehabilitators who can do that kind of work, right?
Yeah. No, it's tempting. But we're very lucky to have two very capable organizations here on the Cape. I mean, and I mean really lucky. If you look around, most parts of anywhere really, you don't have that. And so we have these two good options. You're never far from a wildlife rehabber on the Cape, and they have volunteers who will respond to things. And so, yeah, there are people for that. And
And they know
you know,
more
and it's
about, they
illegal.
know
I
more
mean,
than we do. Yeah. I mean, and they also know
you can't
more.
just, you can't just take migrant, it's illegal. You can't just take birds in your house and make them pets. It's just,
Or any of the other
not
wild
legal.
animals, by the way.
Right,
Right. Yeah.
right.
Just a few minutes left. Talk a little bit about the ospreys. We see, you know, again, we've got a lot of them around this year.
Yeah, and every year and increasing. Yeah, lots and lots of ospreys out there, and it's great. I mean, it's hard. Like if you're new to the area, or you know you didn't really notice birds before, you look around, especially if you're in the Upper Cape, like where you are, through Barnstable, Bourne, Mashpee, Falmouth, Barnstable, that area. There are so many ospreys. Think about, sort of transport yourself in your mind back to the 70s when there were none. Pair the Cape in the 70s. You have an area, the Westport River in Dartmouth, to see the ospreys that nested in the entire state of Massachusetts. You had to travel the considerable distance to see this novelty of a nesting pair of ospreys, you know, in the Westport River there. And now it's just a real success story, and we should just enjoy that. You know, there are lots of issues with them nesting on power lines and a lot of people working on that. There's the great Falmouth Osprey Project, grassroots organization working on that at the community level. And every town needs a version of the Falmouth Osprey Project. It's a continuing challenge for Eversource and their ground crews. And it seems like they're always kind of like getting something wrong with the deterrence or whatever. And birds are still getting electrocuted and power is still going out. But some great work on that front in Falmouth that we would love to replicate in other towns. If there's anyone who wants to take that on in other towns, Barnstable could use somebody to sort of orchestrate getting alternative nesting platforms up for ospreys that are nesting in dangerous situations on power lines. And it's not easy. I mean,
It's a lot of
even
work.
just one. Conscom and the private property owners and the neighbors. Like, imagine having to get all the neighbors on board, and you can never get all of the neighbors on. It's often.
Oh, got a little, you're cutting in and out again, Mark, but I want to share a note from Hannah who wrote back. She says, I find that inserting cut oranges inside suet feeders prevents the squirrels from eating them. I lay the feeder on the table on my deck, and the oranges are eaten by the orioles, catbirds, and red-bellied woodpeckers. So, you know, maybe that would work out. I'm gonna give it a try. And Carl says, busy year of orioles and cardinals in our East Ham yard this year. We had a cardinal nest on our patio and a Japanese maple. Their babies hatched several days ago. We hear them every morning eating breakfast, and mom and dad have been busy bringing food. And today, total silence, no traffic, no peeps. What gives? Have they flown the nest already? And that's probably what's happened, right? We got like 30 seconds, Mark.
Yeah, one of two things happened. They either got eaten, or they fledged and moved far enough away that you're not hearing them every day. And it can be difficult to tell. Yeah.
All right.
Those are your options.
Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. As always, thank you, Mark.
All right. See you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.